Introduce the subject of the identity white paper, which I've been kicking around for a bit, but without either without Nathan and or Ram, it probably shouldn't be discussed.
I was going to say that would be a tough thing to do. So, Stan, did I hear you join?
He's here.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the interoperability and what our current status is on that?
Sure. Well, status has not changed much. So I've made a small edit to kind of group more organizational change. To group the use cases together, not to reiterate them twice. But it's been no material changes since like early or mid-December. I kind of wanted to ask a question. I feel like I'm sounding like a broken record. Keep asking about whether the structure and overall document feels like it's heading in the right direction. The reason today I finally figured out why it's been nagging, the question's been nagging my mind, because so far the papers we've been writing have a lot more kind of a collaboration and contributions from other folks. And this one seems to be kind of I keep pushing towards this kind of an idea that I had in mind originally, and everybody kind of agrees, but still kind of the progress been excruciatingly slow. And so I feel that part of the reason for lack of progress is because the group kind of doesn't necessarily is not necessarily on the same page as far as where this paper should go, and this really should be a more collaborative effort. So any thoughts on that?
I'll just chime in a little bit on this, that I think the other observation about the interoperability is that we're still having a hard time defining scoping it. What is the actual objective? What are we trying to describe? And I think we go back and forth quite a bit on, I don't know, verbiage, intent, objective. Mm-hmm. And until that part is clear, it feels like it's difficult to know exactly what we should be contributing.
Excellent.
I think another observation on that is we're not down to the point where the interoperability paper is still talking at a very high level about objectives as opposed to mapping it down into what the individual platforms would do and how they express this.
Yeah.
That is, interoperability and, you know, when we talk about system identities, we are descriptive. We're describing what the existing platforms do. Our conversations about interoperability are in some sense prescriptive. We're describing what we want them to do.
That's true. Actually, interesting observation.
Morning, Ron.
Hey, good morning. Apologies for joining late. If anybody has not already mentioned it, I should say, you know, quick reminder of the antitrust notice that's there on the top of our meeting notes page. And then Stan, sorry, I missed the first part of your of what the discussion you kicked off. Maybe you can give a brief thing and then we can jump in.
Really haven't missed much. I was just saying that there's not been a whole lot of progress since on the document since mid December. I think that we made a little bit of progress at the meeting, which you weren't at the last call, but it was really just like a single paragraph addition. And again, I think you probably caught most of what I was saying, that I was kind of, again, bringing up the question of whether everybody is kind of more or less on the same page in the direction of the paper, given how the progress has been so slow. And well, you heard Mick's
point. Yes, I did.
It's
yes.
A really great point, actually. So in a way,
yeah. Kind of, so,
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that the difference between this work item and the others is that there is a working instance already of the other items that we've covered so far. And in some sense, it's similar with privacy and confidentiality as well. But at least there is some attempt at providing those capabilities in some other platforms. In this case, we are so early that we are ahead of what the actual frameworks support today, right? So, and I think that's part of the. So we are pushing the boundaries here. So obviously that is going to take more effort. And like everything else, is driven by how much time and effort people are willing to put in. So that's the reason why everything takes longer. So.
True.
But to the point of, when we have a sufficiently large group of people, you know, it does take an effort to get everybody aligned. And I think I hope we've gotten there in the last few meetings. And so that I think everybody should be more or less on the same page. But you tell me.
I agree. I think whenever we kind of focused on a single portion of the document, and we've been making progress again. It's been slow, but as you said, maybe it's there is a natural reason for the slow progress, because we are trailblazing a little bit. So
I think it's interesting, right, that the comment that Mick made about being more prescriptive, and the fact that, you know, as Ram has mentioned, right, we're ahead of the different frameworks that exist, and it feels like maybe being more prescriptive in this document is a useful thing, so that we can help direct kind of where the frameworks end up, especially given the topic, right, of interoperability, and the fact that we'll want these frameworks to interoperate in some way in the future. Mick, when you said that it was more prescriptive, was that a good thing in your mind, or was that a bad thing in your mind?
It's a different pattern than what we have used in the past. And so our discussions about interoperability are very different. When we're talking about system identities, the question Ram always asks is, well, how does Sawtooth do this? How does Fabric do this? And we're sort of incorporating all of those concepts together and then generalizing out of a set of examples. And in the interoperability paper, there's really very little in the way of examples of the interoperability, and the places where we're pulling them out of tends to be, you know, let's see, how are people moving value between, how is a person moving value between Ethereum and Bitcoin today? And, you know, as Vipin points out, they don't really, it's just horribly broken. And I think that's, it's very difficult for us to talk about, it's very different for us to talk about what we want when we don't have examples to build on. So I think it's an interesting different space. And I know this probably aligns more with what Ram had intended for the architecture group, to be a little more prescriptive. So in some sense, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, so I agree. I think, you know, we've always had aspirations of trying to get the projects to converge on common building blocks. And to the extent that there are pros and cons of the different approaches that are being taken, if we call them out, and we kind of use that as a way to nudge the different implementations under our umbrella to kind of work towards a common functional, framework with, hopefully standardized interfaces, then, you know, we work towards the, hey, here are the set of building blocks that we can use across frameworks, right? So that's been our aspiration. I'm not sure we have quite gotten close enough in any of our existing work yet, but since, and this is a good example where we can actually show the benefits of that, given, you know, interoperability is absolutely something that is on everybody's roadmap, but nothing implemented yet. So it's a great place for us to meet and show the value of having a unified framework and common methods and, you know, interoperability. You know, you don't have a choice, right? You have to have the common primitives between them in order to enable interoperability.
So in terms of the actual projects today, in Hyperledger, there's between the various DLTs, there's no interoperability project at all, or is there any? Are there any? I mean, other than the ones like which are hoping to interoperate in terms of the smart contracts, like using the EVM inside Sawtooth, or, you know, Seth, or the other project that seems to be also kicked off in terms of the IBM thing. I mean, I'm not aware of any specific ones, but there is a lot of talk in the outside world. I mean, I know that this may not qualify as a full-fledged interoperability project, but Corda Settler has received a lot of attention in the press, but all of these are specific to doing something with settlement, doing something with welcoming a outside token, or somehow creating a token and then using that to do settlement of value as one of the legs. I mean, that seems to be the main focus of these so-called interoperability projects. But I think we are, like everywhere else, we are seem to be focusing on a very general interoperability setup that doesn't really exist. So, you know, in terms of transfer of state, which, you know, when Nathan was talking about it, he seemed to imply that that it was also the transferring of certain trust or guarantee properties, which are characteristic of the blockchain, not just, you know, having two identities and then, you know, locking one and putting stuff in the other. So there's, you know, all these different, the landscape seems like it's evolving in one direction, but our ideas about it seem to be solving for a more general problem, which has not been addressed, or at least satisfactorily addressed.
Right. And, you know, the way we are defining interoperability at least the kind of problems we're trying to solve is, you know, I guess the closest we have is Quilt, but that's solving a very specific problem around payments, right? So, and I don't think that has been supported by any of the other frameworks yet. So,
yeah, I just put a link out there on the Architecture Working Group Rocket Chat channel. That is a new working group that's just been started on the Fabric side called Fabric Interop. So they have a chat channel, and they also have a wiki page on the new wiki that they've started, and they've had a couple of meetings. Their description may be slightly different than what we're thinking about for interoperability, but that is another place where people are starting to talk about interoperability. And then also on the Quilt side, we've been at Hyperledger had a number of companies that have come to us to say, like, hey, we want to get more involved in Quilt. So we're talking about having a face-to-face meeting, potentially the beginning of April in San Francisco, to talk about what these people want to contribute. And that discussion will end up being more than just Interledger, right? It will be focused on what other sorts of interoperability are we expecting to have across the different Hyperledger frameworks. So I see a lot of things right now that are happening in this space. Obviously, the Architecture Working Group kind of being on the forefront of thinking about this with Stan's paper. But I think there's a lot of other interest in trying to figure this out. So maybe it's a place where we can start to think together, right, with these other groups about what this thing actually ends up becoming.
So this seems to be more of an inter-fabric.
It does.
Interoperability. And is it something to address the whole token thing, or is it something else? Because you also have a fabric token initiative.
I don't know that they're related, Vipin, but I haven't been involved in these meetings, so I'm not sure if they've talked about the token or not.
This is a very, very specific thing that seems to be fabric related, in the sense that how do we transfer value from one network into another network, both of them running fabric, right?
Yes.
Looking at the description, it's even more technical, because they're talking about interoperability of fabric implementations from different vendors. So it's really the high level, like client and peer interoperability following the same protocol. So it's like more organizational almost versus technical. Definitely the networks themselves appear to be pretty homogenous, right? It's all fabric and probably within similar version numbers. Whereas we're talking about something really generic.
Yeah, no doubt we'll be, that's precisely what happens in Corda Settler too. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that Corda is part of our network, but R3 is a member of Hyperledger, and they have been promoting the same thing, which is basically how to interoperate between Corda networks.
Yeah.
I'm sure that this, you know, will help us think a little more about stuff. But if, as you, Tracy, said, the San Francisco meeting is about a larger discussion about interoperability, not just DLT, meaning across DLTs, that are implemented with the same framework, like Fabric. And also Fabric must be now interested since they have the they have this thing called LTS or long-term support in 1.4. They must also be interested in not just crossing the frameworks, but also for how would 1.4 interact with something like 1.5. If two organizations are running two versions of Fabric, because long-term support implies some kind of backward compatibility or forward compatibility. Anyway. How do we progress on our paper? And should we be looking at the paper and looking at how these outside events affect this paper, or should we just continue on?
I think my personal opinion would be that we should continue. It feels like these are parallel effort that may have some synergy when both efforts progress further, because like interversion compatibility, that's something that each implementation will have to decide for themselves, right? And interoperability within different deployments of the same network, that's again frequently be very specific to how things are done. And we're trying to look, as yourself pointed out, much more generic ideas about interoperability, kind of geared towards completely heterogeneous networks.
Like, yeah.
What are the primitives that we're going to need?
I understand. I think, you know, this wasn't intended to derail us or take us down a different path. I really think that continuing the work that's being done here is useful, but knowing and being aware of these other things that are happening as we move forward. I mean, I keep telling folks as they continue, I want them adding stuff to this document. Right? I think this will be kind of our seminal document towards interoperability, and we should make sure that people are contributing to that.
So, Tracy, are you part of those discussions and meetings? If so, if you can kind of or if others are too, like Bin and so forth, we should ask them to kind of invite folks to who are interested in the topic of interoperability to kind of look at our paper, join the discussion, and recruit them so that cross-pollination happens on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, so I've definitely have had the conversation with Quilt. I just had that conversation this morning, brought that up to them. And then the Fabric interoperability, I haven't been able to join yet, one of their calls, but I have definitely let Tong know. So Tong Li is the one who's kind of running this. Maybe what I can do is also just put a message in the in their chat channel and say, like, hey, just so you guys know, as you're moving forward, right, consider adding to this document that the architecture was working on.
Yes. And maybe, specify the scope of what we are trying to do so they can understand, how, if there's any intersection and areas of interest. Right.
Yep.
That'll be great.
So they have a meeting tomorrow? Looks like.
That's right.
Okay.
They do have a meeting tomorrow at 7 Arizona time, it looks like. So, convert that to your time. I guess we're mountain right now.
Okay.
One other agenda topic that, Vipin raised in the identity work group call last week was that, there's a thought that, we have the system identity papers, we've previously agreed that it made sense to focus on system identities in the architecture work group and the broader both identity use cases as well as generic identity things in the identity work group paper. And, you know, he brought up the question that, you know, Nathan and Gordon had raised, you know, is that, does it make sense to have two different papers? I was hoping Nathan would be here today, but don't see him on. I think we were discussing about potentially just completing our work on the identity systems paper assets, then figure out how to incorporate it into a broader paper by reference or by even, you know, incorporating the material itself in the future if it makes sense to have one consolidated paper. But would love to get your thoughts.
Well, if I can talk to that, I've worked some more on the draft of architecture white paper, and I think it's in reasonable shape, except remember how we have these six items, starting with like building a root of trust, and then we were going to revisit each of the write-ups about each framework and kind of organize the contents against those six items. I've looked at that and I've tried to do that, but I just do not know enough about either the frameworks themselves or the identity issues themselves to be able to do that. So if we're going to carry on with the architecture one, which would be simpler and faster for sure to just put that out first, we need some serious volunteers to jump in for each framework and kind of re-chunk and reorganize the write-ups for each framework according to those six items, you know. And aside from that, I think that paper with a few caveats, you know, that I've gathered from Nathan, I think it would be worthwhile, you know. So my thinking has kind of evolved to, let's put out that one. And then if the other group wants to do something more ambitious, let them find the people that actually will write the more ambitious one and include the architecture one as a section of it or not, but make sure to point to each other and all that. I don't think there's any point of us biting off even more to chew when you know, there's still some work left on the smaller one from this group.
Okay, that sounds good. And to your point about more work, maybe we can have some working sessions with each of the leads, Gordon, so that we can get you the help you need to kind of rejigger the text to follow the sections that we had. And the other suggestion was to have like a table like we did in the previous paper. So, you know, we could do both of those.
Oh, I see Danielle Hardman's on here. So he is someone who knows a ton about identity and is a really good writer too. And, you know, if we coax him nicely, may help us write up some of these sections. So
I'm happy to help on the things that I do know about. I'm not going to be much help on, you know, the architecture of frameworks inside Hyperledger that I don't have a lot of experience with, but you know, I'll help where I can.
Well, that's great. Well, what if we asked you, Danielle, to take the write-up about Indy in the architecture identities paper that I did just based on an interview in Montreal. So I'm sure it's not that great, but what if you were to take that and reorganize that as sort of a model for us according to those six themes. And, you know, I've changed in the draft where we used to call them functional requirements. I said, you know, instead of defining functional requirements, I'm saying, you know, discusses these sets of concepts and themes related to identity. So I think that softens that a little bit as we were talking about. Would that be a realistic project for you to take that one section and
sure.
And well, that would be great. That would be really great. And I can send you the link to that G doc and you'll see what I'm talking about. It doesn't have to be long, right? What does everybody think? A page or two on each framework a page?
Yeah, a page is plenty, I think. If we can add more details, that's fine, but you know, I don't think it needs to be extensive.
Okay, well, that would be a really good start. And then we'd have one really nicely done one to look at, and we can move on and model the others after that, Daniel. That would be fantastic help.
Yeah, send me the Google Doc, and you know, I can probably turn it around in a week or two.
Wow, that's great. Really great. Thank you very much for that.
Any other thoughts from anyone else? Okay, so I will take silence as agreement with the approach that we're taking.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Hey, Art. Welcome back.
Hey, Ram.
All right. Stan, shall we just then hand the thing back to you to kind of see where we are on the
sure.
On the interop paper, and then go from there?
Sure. All right. So let me repost the link to the paper. Dev chat. So what I was thinking, I guess, and to Mick's earlier point on that, it's kind of hard to figure out given the topic what the goals are. So the intention of that introduction paragraph was really to define that. So I think it would be great if everyone would just go over that and see what's missing, if it's not enough to define what these goals, right? This clarity over the what we're trying to achieve in the document should really kind of come out of the intro. And even the structure should be kind of dictated by the purpose, which I'll say again, should be hopefully clear from the intro. And then I was thinking, beyond the intro, jumping to the more meaty part, which is probably more fun for the participants, is actually go to this asset transfer use case. And as we talked about before, that particular sequence diagram makes a lot of assumptions, and we need to list those. So I think really the next step would be to try to make sure that we do have a fairly complete list of these assumptions, however broad they are, and see if this is a complete description of the use case. And if we need to tweak to maybe take out some of the assumptions to make them more protocol driven, or can we break those assumptions down into kind of a which step in the protocol do they belong to? So I hope that makes sense.
So which section are we looking at now?
So I figured it would be, I don't know if you guys want to take a couple of minutes to read through the intro. Now is the best use of the time. I think it would probably be productive to make sure that we are on the same page.
So am I correct in understanding that this paper will not cover component portability?
I think early on we agreed that this should be out of scope, that it's component portability is a mechanism which could be used to achieve interoperability. And it's almost to the point of where each implementation can say that if we're looking for a smart contract interoperability, like logic, then having a portable execution engine, interpreter, that's a way to do it.
Oh, it's interesting that
So in particular, you're differentiating between interoperability and portability, right?
Yes.
And I agree. I think we had this discussion previously and we said, let's focus on interoperability here.
No, all that is great. But in terms of the introduction, we are focusing on a particular version of something that we are not handling. If you count the number of words in each paragraph, there are only three paragraphs really in that. And the largest paragraph is about component portability and why we are not handling it. And that, I don't have a problem with not handling it, but, in terms of the distribution of our verbiage, anyway.
Well, but I agree, it does look a little strange that way, but then is there something that needs to be more clarified? Because I think one of the reasons that paragraph about not including portability is there, because there's been a lot of questions about it, that if we're talking about interoperability, then portability seems to be a very natural fit, then we kind of collectively agree that it's a much more specific aspect of interoperability. And so again,
the second sentence, for example, modules that are smart contract data stores, create crypto primitive libraries can be used across various systems to improve their compatibility. For example, the URSA premises, that can be done, right? So you have defined component portability in the first sentence. Mm-hmm. Is the second sentence really necessary?
It was just examples to illustrate, but it's not strictly necessary. No.
Because that is an enumeration of things, right? Basically.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I'm saying all this is because we got to say, we have to definitely mention things that we're not handling. Stuff that we are not handling sort of overwhelms or is the last statement in the paragraph, introduction section, mm-hmm. Rather than the stuff that we are handling, then it becomes sort of asymmetric, But anyway, that's that. My comment for the introduction. So here, going back to a closer reading of this paragraph, the first paragraph is fine, according to me. And I think this whole focus on primitives is great. And the second paragraph is focusing on primitives and then how you're actually going to use that technique to decompose the use case. Mm-hmm. That's also, so is that we are doing that right now, right? That's what we're doing.
Right. Yeah. So Nick, to your comment, so you feel that should be clarified?
What should be clarified?
So Nick added
the comment. Portability versus interoperability. I just wanted to make sure that we capture the fact that we are specifically pushing portability out of scope.
Yes.
So that was as much a comment for myself as it was for you.
Okay. So then with this Vipin's proposed
solution, which can loosely be described as a price. So maybe we should rephrase that first sentence to say component portability is out of scope. Maybe we should, instead of say can be used as a tool to enable interoperability, we can just say, you know, is out of scope of this paper.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I guess my reason for including that was basically trying to define the relationship between portability and interoperability, which again we're kind of still trying to address this, right? Because again, going to a lot of these early questions, I think there was early on even some confusion over whether portability is interoperability.
Yep.
Then there were the two comments that came up during the Montreal Hackfest from Eduardo Garcia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I think is what we're trying to do now. Yeah, it was the first. The second one about the structure, I think it's not a bad one, but it feels like it's a structure for a more, in a way, generic paper, which even more generic paper, which would be kind of a difficult to do without this. I think the structure would be difficult to follow given the stated focus on the use case and the primitives. Or do you think we can fit it in?
No, I don't agree with Eduardo. I never agreed with him, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if these comments exist, then we have to like answer them in a very, sure.
I agree.
Some way.
I've been itching to resolve them for a while, just I'm hesitant to just kind of get rid of them.
So, I mean, not just get rid of them, but, you know, resolve them with comments, right? I mean, we're not going to just dismiss these.
Well, I think we're struggling with this first comment right now. I mean, describing the scope, that's what we're talking about right now. The second one, he's proposed some sort of headings, but I think we've already got a structure in mind, so we can probably say, sounds nice, but not for this particular one that we've already advanced our thinking on a little bit.
So going back to the scope again, it is going to be describing the primitives which you discover through a set of use cases, and then you would try to reframe. I mean, you say here, reframe the same use cases using the newly defined primitives.
Yes.
So in terms of the limited set of use cases, first one was the one that
we call burning, right? I mean, which, yeah. And are we going to do anything else?
Well, I really think that we can, it can be kind of a, this evolving process where we take one use case, maybe extract primitives out of it, then maybe we can apply these primitives immediately to the next use case. Because I think, as again, part of this evolving discussion, we kind of decided that in a way, these high-level use cases that we described, they cover very significant portion of interoperability use cases, because these are kind of very generic. Initially, we looked at rather specific examples of interoperability, but ended up with kind of moving towards these more generic ones that cover broad variety, and I think would allow us to actually provide sufficient detail that we don't even need to cover more specific ones. So I think to kind of answer your question directly, I think we can take them one by one and maybe apply the primitives as we discover them, as we define in the way, I guess, discover is a wrong way to put it. I don't think we should dissect every use case and then just come up with a primitives out of each one and then find the intersection, although we could do that. This feels like a lot of unnecessary work. All right, so I guess this is exactly what I was saying.
In terms of the asset transfer use case, will there be other things to add there? Meaning, I mean, this cannot work unless there is a unified search capability, right?
Yes.
So if you want to ever search for that, or, you know, the registration of an asset for the first time, similar to issuance, would be done only after that search is done. Meaning,
what do you mean search? Yeah,
search in the sense that, okay, this implies there are multiple ledgers that hold these assets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Second thing is, in order to register an asset in one place, you have to either prove it is completely new, or and it's controlled by you, or it is not registered anywhere else before we start this asset transfer process.
Yes. So,
I mean, do we really, sorry to interrupt here. Do we really want to go down the registration wormhole? We might just want to say that that's kind of out of scope of the paper, and that we assume the conditions that VIPN is requiring, namely that things are registered once. Does that make sense? I think if we try to tackle registration, then that's just a whole different can of worms, and I'm not sure we want to get into that.
No, I'm not saying that we should handle all of these requirements, but we mentioned, there are only two sentences in the description of the use case. Asset transfer is a transfer of a non-fungible asset, and there are some examples, across ledgers.
Yeah, so basically what I'm just saying is we take the approach that, you know, we're just looking at interoperability mechanisms that guarantee, like, if something is registered once, then the interoperability mechanisms will never sort of duplicate it, right? And just leave, just mostly leave registration. We should certainly mention it and say that it's a challenging issue, but probably argue that it's out of scope of the paper. I don't know. How do others feel about that?
I agree. And for further down, when we get into more details, the very first section is about assumptions. So that which we have to make so that we don't have to go into this this rabbit hole of details. So you feel that this particular assumption is important enough that we should mention it immediately at the beginning where we state the use case?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's the natural question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that there is another call that's going to be starting immediately following this one, and I see some folks who are starting to join. So just so you're aware that we'll have to cut this off at 11. Or, I'm sorry, 11 okay. My time, whatever the top of the hour is for you.
Sorry, and if I might just quickly add, I just posted a link to the workgroup update. I think a few of us had contributed to that. If you can quickly take a look and you know, send me any comments or suggest any edits, you know, I can make those changes. I think I don't know, Tracy, are we on the agenda tomorrow, or is it being pushed out? I didn't see an agenda published for the TSE call.
I'm not sure, Ram. I haven't seen that either.
Okay.
The agenda does say that your is postponed. It doesn't give a date.
Okay. Well, I posted the update anyway. So, but if you have any input, you know, we can still update it. So, if you have any input to that, please add it. Please send it to me, and then I can update it.
Hart, can I dump it on you to write in that assumption? Make a single sentence.
So Tracy, is this a stack call?
Yeah, the stack call is up next.
Okay.
So I guess the final thing that I will suggest is that once again, we're probably in a situation where we need, you know, face-to-face to get some writing done on this. So if we can schedule something for the end of the month or beginning of February, that might be a good objective for us for one of these meetings.
Are you guys
going
to the Stanford blockchain event?
If I can get into it.
Did you email?
Dan Bonet.
What's that?
Did you email the organizers?
I haven't yet, but that's my objective this week.
Okay, just do that. I mean, it might be a good idea to schedule a meeting around that if people are going to be around.
Unfortunately, I'm in Europe that week.
Oh, that's right. You told me that.
For the week. But the first week of February certainly works for me.
Yeah,
and you know, for me, that I'm flexible, that I can come down with just a little bit of notice.
All right, guys, I'm going to stop the recording so that we can
all right.
Start it on this next meeting.
Okay. Bye, all.
All right. Bye. Awesome. Thanks so much, folks.
Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.